Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing guest, you know, another founder, you know, and again, we're going to be talking about all the good stuff that we'd like to hear. I mean, in this case, a proven founder, a founder that has been building, scaling, financing, exiting companies, you know, for quite a bit. And he is right now on a rocket ship with his latest company, which is definitely, you know, a topic that is very much in mind, and especially very much in mind of founders, because unfortunately, the founder journey really involves depression, you know, and mental health it needs to be top of mind. So again, a lot of stuff that we're going to be covering, like talking about how they came from Finland to the US, made it happen, getting into YC, raising money, and a bunch of other stuff that I think is going to be quite inspiring. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Christian Ranta. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Alejandro. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So originally from Finland, so give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I was kind of born in Finland, in Helsinki, kind of a nice suburb back there, and went to school eventually. I was kind of a nerdy kiddo, so studied computer science and information systems as my undergrad and graduate studies. And yeah, then, you know, just became a huge fan of, you know, several entrepreneurs that I kind of saw in my circles. My mom and dad also both had been entrepreneurs or were entrepreneurs as part of their, you know, career life. So I was kind of like teed up to become a founder at an early age.
So in your case, I mean, you started quite early. You know, how early are we talking about?
Not that early, but I was like maybe, well, 25 when I kind of founded my first own company.
I mean, that's earlier than most people, because most people, you know, they decide to do corporate, you know, for quite a bit. But anyhow, I mean, in your case, you know, like the first rodeo, you know, ended up kind of like a two-step rodeo, right? So which involved a spin-off, an exit, I mean, all types of war stories, you know, in there. So tell us, what did you end up doing there with Mendor?
Yeah, so my first company founded a glucose monitoring business with my co-founders. One of my co-founders back then, he's a diabetic and an industrial designer. So he basically had an idea of like how to improve glucose monitoring for people. So we decided to found a medical device company straight out of school, which is kind of like kind of crazy, but we did it. And it was definitely not an easy journey. It was like an extremely hard journey for us, but it was also very rewarding. And there were a bunch of different phases, and we eventually sold the business to a Korean company. And I actually just not too long ago, I met my co-founder back then. And I mean, he told me that he knows that like the glucose monitor, which is like specially designed for people with type 1 diabetes, it was still in use in like 20 European countries. So it was pretty cool here that it's, you know, even after the sale for like 10 years after, it's still like being sold and utilized around the world. But a couple of things, I guess. I think one major learning from that company for me was like a learning on resilience and never giving up. Because there was basically a time when I was not the CEO initially. I was like VP doing business and business development and stuff like that. And one of the co-founders. But I remember one meeting with the board. I was on the board as well. And we had a board meeting and we had a professional CEO, like a med tech executive, like someone who'd been like a Johnson & Johnson with like $1 billion revenue budgets and stuff like that. We had hired someone like that to kind of take our product to market. But he was not able to raise money for the business, unfortunately. And we were at a place with the board in a board meeting. I still remember it very vividly, where one of the board members asks me and tells me like, hey, you know, we all know here around the table that where you have like 2 weeks of runway, we're out of cash like really soon. And first of all, we got to fire the CEO because like he's not able to raise money. But, you know, what do we want to do? Do we want to like just fold the company, or do we actually want to like do something? And then he just suddenly asks me, hey, Christian, would you be the CEO? And I'm like, damn it, like 2 weeks of runway. You got to be kidding me. But I just instantly said yes, because I don't know, something in me just knew it that like, okay, this is my chance to like kind of save the company and move forward. So I said yes. And it, again, I'm still thinking quite often about it, that it was completely crazy. But I did it. And in 2 weeks, those were, by the way, the most stressful 2 weeks of my life ever. I was so stressed, but I kind of like then started fundraising, and I was able to, through my friends and connections in Finland, I was able to get to a business angel who's like a wealthy business angel, and actually cold called him, and he actually on the call decided to invest, and eventually he invested $500,000, and then we got another $500,000 from a government fund to kind of double that, and then we were up and running again. But it was a crazy 2 weeks of my life.
That's incredible. So I guess, what was going in your mind, you know, there to avoid the stress getting, you know, to your head and being able to deal with whatever is in front of you? Because the problem, you know, that I see a lot with founders is that when they're dealing with an event of this nature, you know, they start going into the what ifs, and that just sucks up all the energy. So how were you able to deal effectively with the fact that you needed to move fast and that you only had 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I definitely do acknowledge and recognize that as well. And I've heard and, you know, heard it and seen it in others as well. I think what I was able to do, like there's a few things that are really, really important that I've learned as a founder. You got to build stress management habits. Like you got to take it seriously. And for me, it's meditation, regular exercise and sleeping enough. So these things are really important. And what I actually also discovered back then, which is something part of my routine nowadays as well, is that I actually, when I was raising for, you know, those 2 weeks, which were like extra stressful, I would actually every morning I'd come to work, I'd start doing like cold calling and like finding investors. And then like by noon, I was so tired and so exhausted because of the stress and the, you know, all that, that I needed to take a walk. And we had a forest right next to our office back then in Helsinki. And I would go on these forest walks for my entire lunch hour, just walk in the forest, clear my head, and the forest bathing, forest energy is just also very rejuvenating. And I was able to continue for the rest of the day again after that. So I think it's like really important to just build those habits that are like kind of supporting your, you know, rejuvenation and like recovery and just like stress management capabilities.
So with Mendor, you know, basically you guys ended up doing a spin-off, and then also there was an acquisition, you know, with a Korean company. So tell us about those sequence of events there.
Yeah, basically, so what happened, like I had been with the company like 7 years full time at that point. I'd been the CEO for 5 years roughly, and we at that point we were looking to raise like a larger round for quite some time. So building a medical device company is very capital intensive. And we were not really able to raise as much capital as we would have needed. And you know, it was coming out of Finland back then. The ecosystem wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like very supportive in terms of like having like large funds investing in like later stage medical device companies. We really struggled raising like a large round back then. We had already raised like 23 million, roughly 22 million euros back then. But we decided to then like find a buyer, and we actually found a buyer in South Korea. So one of our partners, which is nowadays a public company, eventually like acquired the business. And they've actually, you know, since then they've kept it on and they've been selling that product under their name. And it's alive and it's out there in like, you know, around 20 European countries still.
So then let's talk about, you know, turning a page here. So in the end, what was that moment where you realized, hey, you know, I think that maybe it's time for my next chapter? And obviously your next chapter, you know, was quite a successful one, you know, so far. So how did the idea, you know, what you guys are up to now with Meru Health, you know, how did that come about?
Yeah. I mean, like, well, I was just in general, like I've always been excited about healthcare and like building technology in healthcare. So after I sold the first business, I was kind of in a place where I figured that like I need to do something else, or I need to like really think through like, what do I want to build? And then I spent like quite a few months just thinking through, like kind of spending time just thinking about like, what do I want to do? And I kind of like started getting some ideas. And again, I spent quite a lot of time in like meditation and just like leaving room for myself to really like get the next idea and find the next thing that I would get really excited about. So yeah, I spent quite a lot of time. And then I was kind of talking to my co-founder who had already worked with me at my last company. So we too, like my co-founder is called Riku. And with Riku, we decided to like, let's found the next company together. So we started kind of spending some time on the exploration phase together. And then we started looking for a third co-founder, because we needed a tech co-founder. And we then found my third co-founder, Albert, who was our buddy from the school, from university. And he was like a technical co-founder, a technical guy. And we eventually, like, then I got the idea pretty much clarified with Riku, and then we kind of hired, or like kind of recruited Albert as our third co-founder into the company, and then founded the company in early 2016.
Obviously, you know, one of the reasons why you're so driven, you know, when it comes to the health, you know, segment, also to mental health, is a tragedy that happened in the family. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I openly shared that I unfortunately lost my oldest brother, Peter, back in the days to suicide because of his depression. And that kind of drove me from physical health to mental health. I really wanted to like do something that could help people like my brother, not end up like him, and like find different ways, like more holistic ways of healing. Because I had seen that this, you know, just medication or just the kind of things that are very common today were not really working for my brother, and he was actually getting worse. And that kind of drove me to start thinking about like what could be done in different ways. And I've always been a biohacker, or like a long, long time I've been biohacking and kind of always exploring things with my own health and like how can I like thrive and, you know, again, like these, you know, just building those kind of qualities in myself that could help me be a founder, could help me be successful, whatever. And I had realized that actually like mental health care, you know, is very, very important, but it's very narrow focused in a way that we're pretty much just doing therapy or we're doing medication. And there's no like, in a larger picture, there's not a lot of like exercise or like dietary advice or sleep coaching, things like these, or even communities that are like really important actually for human flourishing and human well-being. And I took like a deep dive into these domains before founding the company. And I realized that this is an area where there's like an untapped opportunity, meaning that like more so kind of becoming a lifestyle medicine company, like an integrative company, and then targeting mental health. And that's kind of how I found the unique angle of kind of using technology to scale things, to measure things, to have the data, but also like bringing in these holistic aspects like exercise, sleep, diet, you know, with therapy, with mindfulness, to kind of create a very holistic and a novel offering.
Which is ultimately what you're doing, no, at Mero Health. So how do you guys make money?
Yeah, so we sell to insurance. So we are, you know, we came to the U.S., to build the company. And basically here, health insurance is a major piece of the healthcare system. So we sell the health insurance. We are a provider. So we are a tech-enabled provider. So we employ doctors and coaches and therapists, but we've built our own technology, our own electronic medical record, our patient-facing app, like all that stuff, so that we can deliver care now nationwide for every, you know, in every zip code in the US. And we work with insurance like Cigna, Aetna, United, Optum, Blue Cross Blue Shield plans that are like kind of paying for healthcare services in the US for a lot of people. And that's kind of like, you know, how we've been getting into the market. And those are like our B2B customers. And then we advertise and market to the consumers. So our business model is B2B2C model.
So why coming to the US?
Yeah. So we, having built a couple of businesses in Europe and Asia, I basically, when I was founding Mero Health with my co-founders, we thought about it like, okay, we're going to be going on this journey and we're really going to want to build a really impactful company. We really want to make the best out of it. And how can we help a lot of people out there get access to much better mental health care in the future? And we figured that we were wanting to build a global company eventually. And we want to take the company public at some point in the future to really build like a long-lasting healthcare company. And then we figured that like, what's the best place to do that? Like, what's the most likely place on earth to be able to do that? And it became very clear that it's either Boston or it's Silicon Valley. And you know, we had a longstanding dream also to kind of build in the Valley. And that's why we decided to kind of just figure out the visas and whatever and move here. And that's basically then how, you know, personally kind of started spending most of my time in the US 2017, got my visa sorted out. And then, you know, then that's kind of how we ended up in the US. And it's been a wonderful journey. I mean, like the US healthcare system, healthcare market is 50% of the global healthcare market, just in a single country.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Now, what's also unbelievable is the fact that you guys applied 6 times to Y Combinator. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, so totally. It was pretty crazy. So we came from Finland. We had like absolutely no connections in the US, like maybe like a cousin's cousin or something, but that's it. You know, we knew no one, and we were kind of completely on our own. And we figured that there's got to be a hack. There's got to be a way for us to gain credibility and to become, you know, become a company and a group of founders that starts to be more interesting in the market. And I had talked to quite a few VCs in the Valley, and they were kind of like saying that, hey guys, like this is nice, but you guys are like, you know, 13th company in a dozen in a way. And you guys are like coming from Finland, and like you guys have no idea about the US healthcare system. Like, how could you fix it if we can't even fix it? And you're coming from Finland. We were like, no, but we have some great ideas. And they're like, door shut. Like, okay, damn it. So we figured that we got to hack this somehow. And we started applying to YC. And, you know, initially 3 first times, we didn't even get into an interview. But then, so we were persistent. We knew that like, we got to be able to get in there. We got to show progress. We got to just like keep on moving, get the first customers, you know, start working with universities. We got into Stanford University, started a research collaboration with them in 2017. We started getting like traction. We started getting like meeting milestones, and we had raised some like pre-seed money from some of my old investors out of Finland. And then we basically started getting into interviews. So the 4th and the 5th time to apply to YC, we got interviewed or invited to the interview. And the partners, they were basically like also like telling us like, hey, great idea, but like no way. And then like we just kept on going. And on the 6th try, we had shown a lot of progress during those like, you know, 2 to 3 years, well, 3 years roughly. And then, you know, they just eventually decided to accept our application, and we got into YC in 2018. And yeah, it was fantastic, because I mean, we were at times pretty desperate, but we still figured that like, we got to keep on going, because there is always going to be a chance. Like we were making progress. We knew that they're going to be eventually interesting.
Was Y Combinator worth the hype?
For us, absolutely. I mean, like we had no chance in getting a foothold in the US. It was really hard for, you know, even be attractive to VCs in the early days coming from Finland and having no context or background here. So it was really important. Like we immediately were able to raise our Series seed after YC in a couple of tranches. So we got like after demo day, we got like quite a lot of investors interested. We raised money, a few million. And then, you know, we've been able to hire like some fantastic people out of YC, out of their networks. And, you know, the alumni network is very, very active and supportive. So I've met like so many other founders through the alumni network, and that's been invaluable for us. So I think at least as a first-time founder in the US, it was super valuable.
How much capital have you guys raised to date? And what has been obviously the journey you were alluding to it, you know, with coming out of Y Combinator, how that gave you guys a push, but what has been the journey of raising, you know, all the money?
Yeah, so we've raised like around $50 million so far, our latest round being our Series B. So yeah, it's after YC, we were able to raise our seed round. So we basically had, you know, we had some pre-seed money from Finland, from a couple of tech investors that had invested in my last businesses. But then we managed to raise our Series seed once we got through YC. That helped us tremendously to get traction in the Valley with local investors. And then we basically started growing. We started getting into the first insurance company deals. We got some first employer customers. And then pretty quickly, we raised our Series A. That was from Brad Feld from the Foundry Group out of Colorado. So that was great. He's been extremely helpful and just very, very thankful for his support. So he was our Series A lead. And then we raised our Series B from Industry Ventures, who are a San Francisco, a kind of a global later stage healthcare investor.
So obviously, you know, when you get investment, you know, you get folks to bet on you, they're betting on a vision, you know, just like employees or customers would. So to that, you know, I would say angle or kind of like thinking, if you were to go to sleep tonight, Christian, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Mero Health is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Wow, I appreciate that. So I think what it would mean is that actually we would treat mental health problems in much, much more kind of, you know, holistic ways. And what it would mean is that we would actually be able to get people to completely heal from their mental health problems, which we've seen in our populations, when you actually apply more holistic treatments, meaning that, like, it's not just about, you know, therapy. Therapy is great and important, but it's just one tool in a toolbox. And there are other reasons, like, just give you a very concrete example, that, like, there are known vitamin deficiencies like B12, B9, B6, vitamin D, that actually can cause clinical mental illness. But normal, the mental health system today isn't doing anything to check on those deficiencies, as an example. Like, they're not checking your diet, they're not checking, like, whether you have, like, taking blood tests to look at deficiencies, things like these. And there's no amount of talking that will fix your B12 deficiency, or antidepressants won't fix your vitamin D deficiency. But these are really common. Like, these deficiencies and these issues with, like, nutrients and diets are very, very common, especially in America. So that's kind of like to kind of paint you a picture that a much, much more holistic model is needed to get to a better world for everyone who's struggling with mental health problems.
So they say that there's nothing like being able to get the timing right, being at the right time in history when you're building a company. You know? And it sounds like mental health, you know, years ago, nobody really would talk about it. But now is like the consciousness around it is just like unbelievable. So how do you think that that timing, you know, has also helped you guys to be able to achieve the growth and the execution that you guys are getting on this?
Yeah, I think it's been critically important. I think, like you said, timing is super important. So in this space, mental health kind of exploded in 2019, 2020 with the pandemic, all the kind of telehealth, all the remote therapy, all that stuff exploded. And it helped us tremendously to get started. I think it would have been like very much slower to be able to build this unless we had kind of hit that point, that inflection point. So yeah, I think timing is really important. So it would have been a lot, lot harder journey had we not seen that kind of explosion in mental health.
So now we were talking about the future earlier. I want to talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection. If I was to put you back into a time machine and I bring you back in time, okay, bring you back in time, you know, maybe to 2006 when you were thinking about doing something of your own. And let's say you were able to show up, you know, right there on the spot and be able to give that younger Christian one piece of advice before launching a company. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, I love that. I think the most important single learning that I have learned over my three businesses over my time has been that, like, when you're building a company, you have to set the values and the culture first. Like, that has to come first, because that's how you then are able to hire the right people who resonate at the same frequency, so to say, and who are, like, really aligned with what you're building and how you're building things. Like, why do you come to work every day? Why do you persist through challenges? And how do you work together? Like, how do you treat other people, your colleagues, your customers? And these things are really, really important. And unless you have a clear, like, kind of guidance from the beginning, like clear set of values and traits, like, how do we work? What do we value in this culture? You're not going to create a cohesive culture. You're going to create there's always culture. Like, culture is always, you know, there's a vacuum, it gets filled with whatever, and cultures are always some kinds of cultures. But if you really think about it, culture is the most important thing in a company, and you got to design your culture. So I would advocate for myself back then and every founder that I that I've seen, or you know, who has asked me this question, that like design your culture carefully. Think about the values, think about the traits, think about how you work together, how you treat each other, and how you treat your customers. Because that's eventually like going to be your number one like spinal cord as you grow the company and how it will operate. So I think that was a huge learning, which I did not know when I was building my first businesses. And my cultures back then were pretty like chaotic and crazy. They weren't like aligned and like cohesive. I think that's really, really important.
So I guess when it comes to culture too, you know, and now you guys have like about 140 employees. What would you say were the fundamental building blocks of Mero Health when it came to culture?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So we first actually, before even we founded the company, me and my co-founders, we sat down and we had a value workshop. So where we kind of talked about like, why would we want to embark on this journey? It's going to be like 10 to 15 year, whatever. It takes a long time to build healthcare companies. And you know, we kind of spent quite a lot of like a full day on like thinking about why do we as individuals, as founders, why do we want to do this? Like what excites us? What's the drive in us? And we all shared our challenges with like mental health in our families and had like similar kinds of stories. And we all figured that we want to really build something that is making a difference in this space. And then we also talked a lot about like, how do we want to build? Like we want to build with transparency. We want to build with like customer first. We want to be like very resourceful. So a lot of these things that we went through in that session, and we then kind of wrote them down as our culture and our traits and our values. And one thing that I want to kind of point out, kind of very important single piece, that we had all been like in like high agency cultures before. We had been at consulting firms and like startups and all sorts of places where there's a lot of smart people working really hard. And what we had learned also was that like very often people forget that it's important to also be compassionate and friendly and kind to each other. And we actually wanted to build Mero Health as a high performance culture, but also as a culture of kindness towards each other. Because we had learned that if you're like really high performance and you're also able to be kind and compassionate towards your colleagues, you're actually going to be even more impactful as a team. And everyone wants to work in a kind environment. Even if it's like a high performance, like really chaotic or a challenging environment, even more so, you want to work in a kind environment where other people respect you and treat you kindly. So we actually set one of our values to be compassion. And that was like from the get-go has been also like kind of a beacon that has also attracted a lot of other people to us when we've hired people and when people look at our values. So yeah, it's been very important to define the culture, to define the values, and then very clearly letting it like kind of beacon out to the world so that the right people can find us when you're hiring, when you're looking for first customers, so forth.
I love it. So Christian, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, so merohealth.com is the website, and then christian@merohealth.com is my email. So yeah, feel free to drop a line, please. And also I'm on LinkedIn as well, and happy to always try to be helpful.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, Christian, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thanks, Alejandro. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me today.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.